My guest at this time is Dr. Tim Ball. He's a former professor of climatology at the University of Winnipeg. He's also the author of The Deliberate Corruption of Climate Science. We've asked him to comment on President Obama's visit to Alaska this week. While his decision to rename Mount McKinley is grabbing most of the headlines on this journey, Obama is really there to make the case that conditions in Alaska prove that climate change is harming the planet and that his agenda is vital for our country and the world. For the next few minutes, we'll discuss the facts on the climate and the Arctic. And Dr. Ball, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for the opportunity, Greg.
Let's look at the lead paragraph in yesterday's New York Times article on this story. President Obama will travel to Alaska on Monday, it writes, to call for urgent and aggressive action to tackle climate change, capitalizing on a poignant tableau of melting glaciers, crumbling permafrost, and rising sea levels to illustrate the immediacy of an issue he hopes to make a central element of his legacy. So, Dr. Ball, let's start with that. Obviously, it's summertime, so the ice isn't going to be what it would be in some of the colder times of the year. But what do you make of that background accepted as fact in this story by the New York Times?
Well, of course, that's the whole point. The premise that you set for your debate sets the stage, and when you set it falsely, then you can say whatever you want. In fact, what's going on, people in Alaska know they've had some brutal winters recently. Yes, there's been slightly more extremes, but that's because the jet stream patterns are changing because the Earth is cooling down. And so all of the arguments about sea level rise, about Arctic ice disappearing, if you recall, it's not that long ago that our friend Al Gore was saying that there would be no summer ice in the Arctic. I think the year he set for it was 2014. Well, that proved to be completely wrong. So all of this, by the way, is not only a stage for Obama's legacy. He's chosen the climate change as his legacy item, but also because coming up in November in Paris is a very large climate conference at which they're going to try essentially to reconstitute the old Kyoto Protocol, that is to shut down and blame developing or developed nations for burning coal and creating CO2, and then transfer wealth from the wealthy nations to the poorer nations. And so all of this extremism, they've cooked the books about 2015 being the warmest year on record. They did it last year by lowering the historic record to make this, to change the slope of the curve. So all of this alarmism and fits in with Obama's agenda, and particularly with that agenda that's coming up in Paris.
And let's talk about a couple of the points you just made. And let's start with the last one, and that's that we keep hearing these reports from time to time, and usually year after year, that I don't know what the president's number is. I think it's 14 of the last 15 years are 14 of the warmest years on record and so forth. You just said they changed the methodology. What did they do?
Well, there's several things that they've done. First of all, of course, if you've got a record and it's going up, then you're going to find the warmest years at the most recent part of the record. I mean, that's just logical. And nobody's argued that the world didn't warm up from 1980 onwards up to the year 2000. The problem for the president and for the scientists claiming it is since 2000, the global temperature's gone down, which, of course, is why they switched from calling it global warming to calling it climate change. But what they did was they took a very poor, inadequate, and underestimate of ocean temperatures taken years ago with dipping buckets in the ocean, all that sort of thing. They used that then as a measure for a global temperature 120 years ago. And that, of course, then increased the slope of the temperature increase since the end of the Little Ice Age. And they've been doing this all around the world. We've got lawsuits against the New Zealand government and the Australian government for changing the actual instrumental record and lowering the historic record in order to make the present time seem warmer than it actually is. So they've been doing this everywhere. And there's a suspicion suspicion right now, for example, that there's a report that Arctic and Antarctic ice is breaking up quickly, but that it doesn't fit with the temperature record. It doesn't fit with what is actually going on. But all of this is being engineered to push the political agenda. And, of course, this has been going on for the 40 years I've been watching what they're doing. They had a political agenda, and then they got the scientists to create the facts and the data that they need.
Let's talk a little bit more about the ice. As you mentioned, this may be more about politics than actual science, but if in fact someone's looking at the facts, we have people on both sides of the issue constantly saying that it's receding, it's growing. There was a big story, of course, about the ship that was in the Antarctic Circle either last year or the year before that was down there to track eroding ice, and it ended up getting stuck in growing ice. So what is the actual data showing us right now?
Well, what the data is showing is that there was a decrease in the extent of Antarctic ice and Arctic ice in that warmer period that I talked to you about from 1980. And then starting in 2000, that trend started to turn around, and the ice levels have been increasing. In fact, they had record Antarctic ice the last 2 years. The one factor that they didn't include in measuring the amount of ice, and everybody thinks, oh, it's very simple. You take a satellite image and measure the area. But it doesn't work that way, because you can have water on top of the ice, and the satellite doesn't see that as ice. It sees it as water. And you also get the ice breaking up. And the satellite systems that they use can't distinguish between broken ice, like how much of the, is it 90% covered or is it 80% covered? They don't make those kind of distinctions. And one of the things that causes change is changing wind patterns. And that's what I mentioned earlier. The jet stream patterns have been changing, and that's been causing shifts in the way that the ice forms, the way the ice breaks up. So when you actually look at all of the mechanisms and all that's going on, it's all very natural, all very normal, and well within long-term variability. But, of course, that's not the message that they want to send.
A couple of quick questions remaining for Dr. Tim Ball. And Dr. Ball, a couple of months ago, I think it was, we had a conversation where you said that based on your research and what the models are showing, we're heading into a cooling period that could continue for the next 20-some years. Is that still what it looks like to you?
That's still what it is. The sun reached a peak of activity at the end of the 20th century, and by that I mean 1,000 years. Now, there are shorter-term variabilities of the sun, but the sun started to decrease in its activity. The number of sunspots has diminished dramatically, and in fact, we've had a couple of times recently when there have been no sunspots recorded, and within the modern record, that's relatively rare. So the number of sunspots decline. We know the mechanism of the relationship between sunspots and global temperature. And basically, when there are lots of sunspots, the Earth is warm. When there are very few, it's colder. And the mechanism is that the sunspots are not actually causing the temperature to change. They're a manifestation of changes in the magnetic field of the sun. And as the magnetic field of the sun varies, it controls the amount of cosmic radiation reaching the lower atmosphere. That determines the amount of cloud cover we've got, which of course then in turn controls the temperature. It's like putting a screen up in the greenhouse. And so as these sunspot numbers diminish, then the global temperature is declining. And as I said, that's been going on since the year 2000.
And lastly, Dr. Ball, as these numbers get cooler in the big picture over the next couple of decades, how much does that add, in your estimation, to the political urgency for those who are advancing this agenda, such as the president?
Well, of course, it adds to it in the sense that as things don't turn out as they're forecasting it to turn out, then their credibility disappears. And the last time they tried to bring in a Kyoto-style protocol was just prior to the 2009 Copenhagen conference. And just prior to that was when they leaked the emails from East Anglia showing how this science was corrupted. That put the whole thing back for them. But now they, of course, they don't give up with their political agenda. And so now they're pushing for Paris. And in fact, they're meeting in Bonn right now in the pre-conference to determine how they're going to sell the message at the Paris conference. And so you're going to see more and more of these claims about extreme conditions. And of course, the president's exploiting that with his visit to Alaska.
Dr. Ball, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you, sir, as always, for your time.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Tim Ball is a former professor of climatology at the University of Winnipeg. He is also the author of The Deliberate Corruption of Climate Science. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.